Welcome to the Everyday Ironman Podcast, where we talk to real athletes just like you and me that are working to achieve an incredible goal. My name is Mike Bosch, and I'm excited to have with me today an athlete who is training for his very first 70.3 triathlon, Austin Richards. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much, Mike. Excited to be here. I just kind of discovered your show kind of by chance when I first got interested in triathlon. So I listened to a few of the episodes, learned some things from it personally. So excited awesome. To be on and, be able to hopefully, even though I haven't gotten to the race yet, hopefully glean some of the things I've learned so far. And maybe it'll help people that were kind of in the same situation I was.
Well, that is awesome. And I am confident that you will be able to share some things from your experience that another listener will be able to benefit from, whether it's somebody that comes across the podcast recording in real time or if it's something that 2 years later. Because I don't know if you know this, Austin, but once we publish this podcast, it's a matter of historical record. Like, it is out there for entirety. I will pay my podcast host $18 a month for the rest of my life in order to make these conversations available. Just so you know what you're getting yourself into.
All right. Historical record. Love to hear it.
Awesome. And with us again, and I don't even know how many times now she has been on the podcast, but Ashley Rains is joining us today for conversation and is actually at the control tower. She is running all the buttons and the switches and starting and stopping and all that stuff. So, Ashley, how are you feeling today?
I'm great, Mike. Thanks for having me again and letting me do this. It's really fun. I'm in a crazy mid training, and so the fatigue and the hunger have hit hard. If you hear me crunching, I'm sorry.
You're really going to put our editing skills to the test. I like it. Yeah, because Austin, your race is coming up at the time of the recording. If I'm doing the math right, you're about 2 months away from Boulder 70.3, correct?
Yes, that's right. I think I'm following just kind of an off-the-shelf 16-week training plan, and this is week 8, so it's
you're halfway
pretty much
there.
Exactly halfway through the meat of it. So.
Nice.
Give it another 3 weeks, and you will be starving all the time.
Yeah, because Ashley, you're doing Chattanooga, so your race is a few weeks ahead of Austin's, correct?
Yep, May 9th, May 20th, 19th, something like that.
Nice. Okay. Well, Austin, you have heard the podcast before. You know that we like to ask our guests to provide a little bit of a level set introduction of themselves before we get too far into conversation. And really what we like to have this is just so that the listener can get a sense of perspective of, you know, what stage of life somebody's in, what kind of time constraints did they have, and what kind of athletic ability do they had coming into the sport. So what we always like to ask, and we're not filling out like a survey, you're not going to get hit with a bunch of spam or anything like that, but really like, where do you live? Do you work? Do you go to school full time? Are you married, in a relationship? Do you have children? Do you have pets? Like, do you have high maintenance pets like I have? And then what was your athletic background, growing up? Did you play sports? Did you consider yourself a sporty person? Can you provide all that for us?
Yeah, absolutely. And, Mike, I've listened to the show a little bit, so I've always kind of enjoyed your lengthy asking of this question, which is always kind of the same. I think it's pretty pretty standard. I'm not going to reveal anything that I don't want to, so no worries there.
I didn't catch you off guard with that at all.
Oh, yeah. decided to come on, so I'm happy to share a little bit. Awesome. So, yeah, first of all, in terms of the athletic background, I would, wasn't probably the classic kind of jock or athlete in high school, but I did do some sports, probably a solid kind of middle of the pack kind of guy. So of the three sports, my background is certainly the deepest in running. So I ran cross country when I was in high school, kind of just like a JV kind of guy, middle of the pack. And then kind of towards the end of high school, put a little bit more attention into that. But that was the only formal sport that I have any background in, a bit of cross country. I'm a mountain sports kind of guy. So I like to climb, I like to hike, I do some mountaineering and things like that. So I have probably most of my fitness historically has come from playing in the outdoors, but I didn't do any other kind of formal sports. In terms of where I'm at in life, I just recently learned a new term, which I was unfamiliar with, which is DINK. I don't know if you know what this is. It's an acronym. No. Apparently it means dual income, no kids. So that's what I guess my wife and I are. I don't know if that's usually like pejorative or what, but I'm running with it. So I guess I am a dink. So my wife and I are in our early 30s. We just got married a little over a year and a half ago. It's been now going on 2 years. No kids, no pets. So we're kind of just, have probably more free time than some of your guests, but we both work full-time jobs. So my biggest constraints in terms of training is just work, which I work for the federal government, but it's a remote job. So I work from home. I'm here in Colorado and I work on East Coast time, which has the benefit of I'm logging off at 3:34. So I've got a little bit more time in the afternoons to, do some of my training, which
I want that job.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jeez, that's awesome.
I'm not much of a morning person, which is the other side of that, logging on at 7 a.m., but, I have gotten used to it and it's nice to be able to.
Do you get dressed for work or do you stay in your house clothes?
That's a good question. Well, from the waist up, it's all
right,
business.
Nice.
No, I'd say... No, I'd say, pajama pants and so forth, but no,
living the dream.
Yeah. I would say it depends on the day. It seems like lately there's been less and less meetings that people are flipping on their video. A lot more people have gone remote after the pandemic. It kind of opened up more flexibilities. It kind of depends on the day, but I do still have to occasionally put on my business clothes.
That's awesome. Yeah, I think I told the story one time. I don't remember if it was on this podcast, but right after the pandemic and we went into the office every single day, but we were looking for ways to kind of keep it fun. And so we had a theme week where, like at school, and we had one day was pajama day and I had to run some errands at lunch. And I remember I was at Lowe's and the lady was like, kind of casual today, huh? And I was like, well, it's pajama day. And she goes, oh, working from home. And I was like, no. I had my Star Wars pajamas on, like a super comfortable. I mean, it was a great day. I can imagine the business. What do they call it? The business up top, the party down low, or something like that. You got like the tie on and the slippers and the whole thing. That is awesome. So you did some running, but how did you transition that to triathlon? How did you first be introduced to the sport? What got you from there to here?
Yeah. So, and when I say I ran cross country in high school, I didn't run again for quite some time. It wasn't until after college and grad school, I was living, kind of working my office job. And I grew up in Colorado and I was living in Washington, D.C. And I was a little bit further from some of the outdoor hobbies that I like to do. And that's when I noticed kind of my fitness and my general well-being associated with that kind of declining as I kind of fell into the trap of, going to work, going to happy hour, going home. And that's mm-hmm. about it. So I took up running again around that time. That was a few years back before the pandemic. And that was kind of interrupted by COVID. So I'm kind of goal oriented. So taking up running, I'd always kind of had it in the back of my mind that I'd like to run a marathon. So, kind of had that as a goal that I, wanted to do. And my first kind of, stab at that was interrupted by the pandemic, which kind of shut things down a little bit. But a little while later, I got back into running habit again. Unfortunately, I was in a serious climbing accident that occurred, that I was very fortunate to survive from. That accident occurred just a couple weeks before what was supposed to be my first marathon. So I'd been working towards that goal for a long time. I'd just done like my 20-mile run, like the longest run, you know, you normally do in training. One of the first things they said was that, you know, you're not going to run again. That was a little over 2.5 years ago. Destroyed kind of the left side of my body, but after a lot of work and rehab and PT and, kind of just working my way through it, I was, you know, as soon as you have something on your radar, your goal list, and it's taken away, it just makes you want to get back to it even more, you know? Still kind of had the goal of, you know, hopefully getting to that marathon or at least getting to do some running again. And this is kind of where my interest in triathlon got started, because, after a long time I was, you know, after working hard and PT and so forth, I was able actually to kind of slowly get back into some running and some light jogging, but I probably wasn't ready to be running, you know, 5 days a week. My body wasn't ready to handle that kind of impact yet. And I just so happened to hear in Boulder, have at one point been driving and just by coincidence drove through the Boulder 70.3 while it was happening. The road closure was there. I didn't know much about triathlon, and saw the Ironman sign, which I was kind of vaguely familiar with, what Ironman was, and, got thinking about that, stopped at a coffee shop and actually met somebody that I just completed the Boulder half and got chatting with them. And they kind of told me what it was about and kind of piqued my interest. I realized that, you know, in my recovery from my accident, cycling was a huge, kind of beneficial activity for me. It kind of gave me some knee mobility, some leg strength, and some energy back. Same with swimming. So I was kind of putting it together and thinking, you know, maybe triathlon could be something that I could give a shot at. It'll help me get back into pure running. So that's kind of my initial entry to the thought of trying something like this.
Wow, that's amazing.
And I guess the last part is after the accident and after some time had passed, my wife and I actually took a sabbatical from our jobs. We got married, and right after we got married, we took a year off. We were fortunate our jobs kind of allowed us this kind of flexibility, so we're both back in our old jobs now. But for 1 year, we traveled around the world, did a bunch of things that we wanted to do. And as part of that trip, we cycled across Europe, and we cycled from the Atlantic coast in France to Budapest over about 7 or 8 weeks. Prior to that, I'd never done any real cycling, you know, more than you probably do as a kid or, you know, 8 or 9 miles, but I'd never done any kind of real cycling. My wife had never ridden a bike really at all, but we kind of had this idea it'd be a fun way to experience Europe and our travels. So we just planned out a route. We bought some cheap bikes over there. We loaded them down with, you know, 30 pounds of camping gear. And cycled across Europe, camped pretty much every night. And during that part of the trip, I realized I really like cycling. you know, I was enjoying it. Totally different type of cycling than road cycling, like for triathlon training. Mm-hmm. I realized that I just enjoyed being on the bike. It was a nice kind of pace. I enjoyed that was kind of my first exercise in a meaningful way that I'd done in a long time and was feeling really good about that. And around that point, that's when I was like, okay, I think when we get back from our trip, I think I'm going to really give a go at this whole triathlon thing. And so that was kind of the final seedling planted for got home from our trip and pretty much signed up for the Boulder half and have been working towards that goal for a little while now.
Wow. That's amazing.
Cool. So I'm going to need you to email me some key notes on how to talk my wife into one of those bikepacking trips.
Absolutely.
Just, you know, whenever you get the opportunity, no pressure, just whenever you get a chance.
Can you send me the route? Is the route on Strava? Exactly. That's what I would like to know, please.
Let's take a quick break.
Hey, quick question for you. Are you someone who wants to be fit, healthy, and happy? And what if I told you you could get your dream body by simply just listening to a podcast? I'm Josh.
And I'm KG, and we're the hosts of the Fit, Healthy, and Happy podcast.
Listen, we get it. Fitness isn't easy. Carbs, no carbs.
Just stop, okay? It doesn't have to be that complicated. And that's why we made this podcast. We get straight to the facts so you can become your best you.
So the way to check us out is click the link in the show notes or search Fit, Healthy, and Happy podcast on any of the major podcast platforms. We'll see you soon.
You know, in terms of the route, it's amazing how in Europe they're developing these routes. They're called the Eurovelo routes, and they're kind of in different stages of development. We did one of the ones that was kind of like most well developed. But truly, yeah, you follow. It's really well signposted. It is pretty much like as easy as downloading a Strava route and following it. So it's the infrastructure is really well set up for it, and it's, a lot of it was through France, and you know the. They're pretty used to sharing the road with cyclists in France. It's a little bit more friendly than probably trying to cycle through some of our, you know, interstates and so forth in the U.S. So,
did you feel any obligation at all to wear a beret and put a loaf of bread in the basket to fit in a little bit more, or did you feel comfortable in just your American clothes?
Well, I'll tell you, we really leaned into the bread and the cheese, and you know, a picnic in the middle of the day with a bottle of wine. We would drink the wine of whatever wine region we were cycling through.
Oh my gosh!
Sometimes stop and go check out some vineyards, and so it was lovely.
Wow!
Yeah,
what a trip!
That was awesome.
That is awesome. So cool.
Yeah. Well. Yeah, and obviously we hope that you recovered from your climbing accident. Do you still go climbing today, or is it something that you stay away from due to the unfortunate situation?
Yeah, you know, I think I still do climb a bit. Kind of it's probably changed my relationship with climbing. My partner did not survive the accident, and I think
I'm so sorry.
Oh,
thanks.
Wow.
Yeah, and you know, and I think you know, you go through something like that, it certainly changes your relationship with a lot of things in life, and kind of you know, pull some things into perspective, but yeah, and I think honoring life and honoring, you know, his legacy as well kind of feeds into some of my motivation to continue some of these activities. But you know, to answer your question, yeah, I still do some climbing, but I'm also you know, exploring new activities like triathlon, which kind of give me some similar I get some similar kind of things out of, I think. So.
Gotcha. Okay.
So how is your run recovery? Where are you in your run recovery stage right now?
Yeah. You know, I'm really blessed, I guess. And, you know, I've worked really hard for a long time that it's always like walking a tightrope with like trying to push it, but then, you know, I push too hard and I get these big pain spikes and so forth. But you know, I'm doing it. I'm running and it's going well. So especially lately, I've had to kind of do it and then back off and then do, you know, PT and strength training, and had to be really careful about my return to it. I'm convinced that cycling has really been the biggest help in sort of getting the joint moving and building up some of that leg strength. About halfway, you know, when we started that bike tour, no way was I going to run. Every once in a while, I would try a jog, and it would just feel so unstable. And about halfway through the bike tour, I just started to feel more connected to the ground. You know, I just like felt like I was getting some of that back. And started doing some jogging after we'd finish our day cycling, and I would just go for a jog. And yeah, the idea was kind of planted of triathlon. And
A little brick session in. I like
it. Yeah.
How did that feel? Was that like just I can't imagine how that must have felt. Just thinking you'd never run again and doing that.
Yeah, it's, you know, when they, like I said, when they tell you you can't do something, it makes you want to do it even more, you know, as soon as something's out of reach. So it's just, I'm so happy that I have been able to get back to it. I still hope to get back to that marathon. I think that, you know, once I get through the Boulder 70.3, I'll kind of assess where I'm at in that and if I'm ready for a marathon build. But gotcha. It's been great.
That's awesome.
So how did you decide, or why, what prompted you to decide to go straight to 70.3 versus starting with like a sprint or anything like that? Was it more logistical? Was it that connection to having been exposed to Boulder, as you described, or, you know, the 70.3 as you described in the story earlier? Or was it just go big or go home type of decision?
Yeah, you know, I'm probably violating all the conventional advice that you hear. You know, they tell you do the sprint and do the Olympic before you go up the ladder. I think for me, I've always kind of liked the more endurance stuff. So I kind of liked the, you know, and I'd heard of Ironman, and then I learned that and those distances to me just sounded crazy.
Yeah.
I was like,
because they are.
Yeah, they are.
Like trying to do all that. But when I heard the 70.3 distances, to me it felt like, okay, you know, that seems like a real challenge to complete, but it felt like it was within the realm of something that I could build to, and it still kind of you know, had that endurance, that longer kind of element to it, which I've been attracted to. And you know, I really would have liked to have actually done a shorter distance triathlon in preparation, but because the Boulder 70.3 is pretty early in the season, it's June 8th, I've looked into it, and there's just not a lot of local races that early that are really going to fit in. You know, I could travel, but it was always probably, if I was going to do a shorter distance race, it was probably always going to be in service of the goal of doing the longer one. So I, you know, after looking into it, I'm going to practice my transitions. I'm going to do a, kind of, self triathlon, you know, I'm going to go to the pool and practice everything on my watch and do a swim, bike, run, beforehand. And I'm doing all my homework and doing all my research, 'cause I don't, you know, working towards this thing for so many months, I don't want it to be, you know, some logistic, if there's a blow up, I don't want it to be logistical because of something that I could have prepared for or I would have learned if I'd done a shorter distance race. So
I think that's very practical. So you had mentioned earlier that you are on a 16 week training plan. You're halfway through. Have you looked at the training plan all the way through, or have you had the ability to, or is it something that's revealed to you 2 weeks in advance, 1 week in advance? Like how is that?
Yeah. So, you know, like previously when I was doing what was meant to be marathon training, you know, I was familiar with this. I think it's more common in running where you just Google marathon 16 week plan and there's 1,000 options. And I quickly found out for triathlon, there's a lot more to it. The plans are a lot more involved. There's a lot more zone and effort based stuff. And my first thought was just overwhelmed. Like, I don't know. Probably wasn't going to do a coach this time around. Right. And you know, I'm mostly, you know, it's hard not to end up with some times in your mind, but I'm mostly doing it just to complete it. That's my goal. And so I followed this one. It's probably one of the more popular ones. It's like a Matt Fitzgerald plan on like triathlete.com. It's called super simple triathlon, 70.3 training plan. And I did, it's all just online, and it's a little bit probably less involved than some of the other options out there. And so what I did is I just got a big kind of flip chart poster board, permanent markers, sketched it out, wrote the whole plan on a big sheet of butcher paper pretty much, and pinned it up on the wall. So yeah, every time I'm on the trainer, I can see the whole plan in front of me. And, cool. You know, I got the that permanent marker and I cross off the days.
That's really cool.
But I don't, you know, I'm using it as a guide. I'm not like my feeling is, okay, if I can hit this type of intensity or volume, then I'm feeling pretty good. A lot of times I do a little bit more, than the plan. The plan's pretty light on some stuff. So I do a little bit longer, on some of like the long bike rides and some of the swimming workouts he's pretty okay. light on. So, but I'm using it as just like a guide. I've been following it closely, but not like, yeah, not sticking 100% religiously to it. So.
Okay. How are you feeling on your nutrition plan?
Yeah. So, the short answer is I'm trying to figure this out as it gets a little bit closer to the race, and my workouts are just starting to get long enough that I'm, starting to think a little bit more about the fueling, as much as practicing for the race itself as for the workouts themselves.
Yep.
So the first thing I did was I researched what nutrition is on course. I learned that Gatorade endurance formula was on course for all the Ironman events. So I went and ordered myself some of that. And then of course immediately learned that that's no longer. So yeah. I don't know if you guys, so that's too bad because I've been,
I haven't heard that it's no longer on course.
Yeah. Apparently just as of this year, they, are no.
What is on course? What is it?
It starts with an M. It's similar to those gels in the name, Morton? but I don't think it's that name. But I got to be honest. I actually took some at Oceanside. I didn't notice any difference.
Okay.
And they were calling it Gatorade at the bike aid stations. They were calling out Gatorade, but it looked like it was water bottles that they had mixed with a powder and they were handing out. It wasn't a branded bottle or anything like that. So everybody's body is going to react a little bit different. And so Austin, you're doing the right thing, you know, finding out what's on course and getting it ready. But I did not notice any difference, between the fluid that was on course and the Gatorade that I'm used to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I think it's Mortal Hydration is what
that sounds right.
Okay.
And it's, I, from initially looking into it, it sounds like it's more electrolytes and less carbs. But then I think
I'm fine with that.
I think what I was also reading, Mike, and maybe you would attest to this. I think they might have regular Gatorade, but it's not the endurance formula, which is like the one that they had more, you know, kind of electrolytes and stuff added. Was that what you saw at Oceanside?
I don't know. They were not handing out Gatorade bottles. You know, on the run course, they always hand out the cups. And so, you know, it's pre-mixed, but usually on the bike course, you get a branded bottle that they just kind of open so that it's easy to consume. This looked like it was water bottles that were mixed with a powder and being handed out. So I'm not 100%. But actually, to that point, some athletes, myself included, count on those carbs and those calories as part of your fueling plan. So it is definitely something to take into consideration if you are if you're counting on having that available as part of your fueling process to make sure that you know what the effects are going to be.
Right. I kind of like the concept of having a drink that is less carbs for those that have blood sugar issues.
Sure.
You know, when you're trying to maintain your blood sugar and all they have on course is the Gatorade, I mean, that's going to spike you really high. So I think that's a cool concept. But to your point, yeah, people do count on those carbs. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be a big change, I think. That'll be interesting to see its impact.
Yeah.
So Austin, I'm gonna put on my coach hat for just a second here because I'm an official coach now. That is so not true. But I did order a shirt and it says coach on the back. I have to get a magic marker and put not a in front of it. So if you, I would look at your training, right? I would pick a day, a training day that is 4 weeks before Boulder, and hopefully you have a brick workout. And hopefully it's a long bike followed by a fairly long run, so meaning a 3 to 3.5 hour bike with a 40-minute run, right? And what I would do, and TriDot, which is the training plan that I follow, has us do that. They call them race rehearsals. And I would literally try to mimic that as your race as much as possible, meaning I would eat what you're going to eat the couple days before, plan to start, 8 o'clock in the morning. I would practice, my transition, my bike to run. I would do all the things just so you know how your body's going to react. Make sure you wear what you're going to wear on race day so that you, that would be my advice, having, knowing that you're going straight from, mm-hmm. No triathlon to 70.3 triathlon.
I think that's excellent sound advice. And I'm not just for someone who's going from no triathlon to 70.3, but just anybody who's training for those longer distances, even Olympic. I think that those dress rehearsals are key to helping us mentally prepare for what's ahead and helping the body adjust. And so you can know what you need. I remember pre-writing the Memphis bike course at one point, and I think we did about 40 miles and then we went for a short run and it was hot that day, but I hadn't fueled enough. And I learned a very valuable lesson that I need electrolytes and a lot more of them than I expected. And I bonked hard.
Yeah.
Like kind of had to like lay on the run path. It was bad. So I think it's important that you practice that nutrition when you're dress rehearsal to, so you'll be prepared.
Oh, well, that's great. I'm here to elicit free advice. I appreciate that. And keep it coming. That's kind of been in keeping with my plan, And the other thing I did was just buy a different gels at the, the mm-hmm. local running store. And on my longer rides, I've just been experimenting. So far, I've found that I really don't like goo.
You're in good company.
Yeah. I think it's a little bit more expensive, but I do think I like the Martine, which is the one I think mm-hmm. they have on course. It's just a little bit easier to get down. So, I don't know. I'll probably just continue to work on that, make sure I can tolerate it. And I think that's a great idea to give like a full rehearsal with the full, amount of intake that I'm going to plan mm-hmm. for.
Yeah. And I would, again, strongly recommend, Austin, that you have a strategy or a plan of how much you're going to consume and at what time. Don't rely on when you think you're thirsty or when you think you're hungry, because it's too late at that point, right? You need to be on a particular schedule. And I know you haven't listened to the whole catalog of episodes, and that's fine. But I got advice early on, and I share that as much as possible, and it's something I still adhere to. If you don't have to pee at least once during a 70.3 or twice during a 140.6, you didn't drink enough fluids, and you're going to pay for it on the run. So just know that you need to consume enough liquids on the bike to be hydrated for the run.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
I agree 100%.
Yeah, so let's talk about, Ashley had mentioned a second ago, she had the opportunity to ride the Memphis course 40 miles. I'm guessing not well in advance, since you don't live in Memphis, Ashley.
Yeah, no, it was a few weeks, but yeah. Not well in advance, no.
Have you had the opportunity, Austin, to ride the Boulder course?
Well, this is one area that I'm pretty blessed, because I live here in Boulder, and the course is probably, the way the crow flies, a half a mile from.
Oh my God. Are you serious?
Oh my gosh.
So I bike on the course. I've run the full course multiple. I can run from my house to the course and do. So at Boulder, both the run and the bike are two loops. So it's about a 10K run loop and a 28 mile bike loop. And yeah, and both of those cross within just a couple miles of my house. So it's nice that I'm able to train directly on the course. Kind of helps with the, you know, visualizing, and it won't be any surprises in terms of the terrain.
And it's a beautiful course. It is beautiful. I am so jealous. That's beautiful there. That's so awesome.
You know how it's funny how we all hear different things? I just heard who I'm staying with next summer. That's what I heard.
That's right.
That's all I heard was Austin lives on course.
That's right. Let me know.
At Boulder.
You don't even have to deal with the shuttle.
Yeah, no.
Oh my gosh, the shuttle was such a pain when I did it. It was such a pain. So that is awesome. But you live closer than the parking lot at the shuttle. That's awesome.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Oh, that's so funny. So usually we'll ask a particular athlete, "Hey, is there anything about the race that you are nervous about, or that you need to figure out?" So you know the course, right? You know the course front to back, back to front, the whole thing, right?
Yeah, and actually on Saturday, we're recording this on a Wednesday, so just in 3 days, they're having a Boulder Reservoir half marathon, and it is the exact course that the half Ironman uses,
cool.
Turn by turn. So I'm gonna do it. I signed up for it yesterday, and I think it'll be fun to even get to do it. You know, I don't have the fitness right now to give my best effort, but just as a training run and to be able to do a little bit of like a, even like a race day logistics on the exact same run course.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I think is
pretty
neat.
Tell me, what kind of shoes do you plan on using? Cause that course, is it like a packed dirt?
Yeah, I actually am quite fond of the surface. It is a packed dirt. It can be a little bit bumpy in some spots. So, you know, you're kind of on a reservoir loop. You run out across two dams, and then you get a little bit further away from the reservoir, and there's some slight rolling hills that you're on some kind of mixed packed dirt roads that wind their way back and around. So it's a pretty... you know, it's at least this time of year, there's a lot of wind. I don't know in June what it'll be like here in Boulder. Here in June, it could be anything from, you know, 90 degrees to snowing.
Right.
So it'll probably be pretty pleasant. They used to do the Boulder race in August, and I think that would be a lot more brutal heat wise. Mm-hmm. So I think June is probably more comfortable, but it's a nice surface for running. Shoes, I'm running right now in pretty neutral, pretty well cushioned shoes. They help my knees, so I'm running in like Brooks Glycerins, I think they are. I was running in like Hoka shoes, which were all right as well, like Hoka Bondis, which are really, really cushioned. I'm kind of switching down. I don't think I'm gonna do anything too crazy and get carbon shoes until I'm really like feeling like I'm have the fitness and running back to give it a hard race effort, and then I'll feel like the carbon shoes will be a exciting boost. But I don't anticipate being there by the Boulder 70.3, so I'll probably just run it in my regular trainers.
Yeah, I had wished I actually had done them in trail shoes.
Oh,
with
okay.
with that packed dirt, I kind of wish I'd had more traction. My road shoes just didn't quite cut it. So I'll be curious to see how you feel after this weekend.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny, actually, because there was a point in time where I was going to do Boulder this year until Diana scheduled that cruise. And I had that same question. So I appreciate you asking the question. Because I don't know that I would have remembered to ask it, but I also, when I was going through the motions, trail shoes were on my list of consideration. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and there's a couple different variations of trail shoes. The ones I have are pretty knobby, but I also don't know that road shoes would have given me the same experience. So I think you're right, Austin. I think this having the ability to run this race this far in advance, because if you go out there and you find that the shoe you're running in isn't the right shoe for that surface, you have time to make an adjustment and still get some decent miles in before the race. So that's a real advantage.
Yeah. Right. That's a major advantage. And the other thing is there is no shade on that run course. Like you are completely exposed. So that was one thing. Lots of sunblock and just be prepared for that. Cause that sun. Yeah. And then when I was there in the afternoon, every day we were there right over the reservoir, there'd be a big storm that would come through. Right. So you want to get done before the storm comes.
Yeah. I think last year, they canceled the awards because of the storm. It seemed like because the Saunders were there and they didn't find out until much later slot allocation because of the storm. So that's definitely something, you live there, right, Austin? You'll know. You'll be back in your house with your feet up and on watching Netflix or something.
Having a barbecue. Yeah.
I'm saying suckers.
While the rest of us are dragging our stuff from to the shuttle and getting drenched.
Oh, that's so funny. That is so funny.
So it was a different experience, you know, living here, but depending on how it goes and if I want to do another one, I'll travel for the next one just to kind of see it both ways.
Yeah. No, you got
that's
time.
That's so cool.
So what about swim, though? Where are you practicing your swim? Are you swimming in a pool or are you swimming in the reservoir on course?
Yeah, so before this idea, I had no experience swimming in terms of, you know, swimming for distance with a cap and goggles. You know, I have some ocean hobbies. I'm a dive master, scuba diver, and I do some surfing and stuff. So I grew up swimming in the ocean. So I always kind of fancied myself not too shabby of a swimmer. That was until for the first time I timed myself swimming any set distance and then Googled like how fast is this? Oh, that's not I'm nowhere near being able to make the cutoff. But it's amazing how watching YouTube videos and learning some basic form principles. And so I've, this time of year in Colorado, we don't really have a lot of opportunity to swim outdoors. The reservoirs are still cold. Some of them have some public swimming areas that open later in the year, but not yet. So my swimming has been pretty exclusively in the pool. I just got the rec center membership here at the Boulder Rec Center, which is always very popular and bustling, which can sometimes be a nuisance for getting a lane. But yeah, I've just been, going down to the pool. And the other thing that I did was I figured I needed just some tips from somebody who knew. So I actually, when I was buying a pair of running shoes at a running store here, and this is kind of how it is in Colorado. It seems like everybody's involved in endurance sports in one way or the other. But the gal that was working behind the counter, was asking what kind of shoes I was looking for. I mentioned that I was, training for my first triathlon, and come to find out she's like a triathlon coach and a former collegiate swimmer. Nice. So I was just like, could I pay you, a little bit to come to the pool with me just two or three times and watch me swim and give me some pointers? That was super valuable. So she, came to the rec center with me two or three times. I sent her like a video that my wife took on the side of the lane before we met up for the first time. So that was been helpful to just get somebody that knows what they're talking about, give you some pointers, some things to work on. At this point, I feel like I've really plateaued. It's mostly I'm not really getting much faster, but hopefully I'm getting at least just better endurance so that the distance isn't going to wipe me. But yeah, I go try to get three swims in a week, but it's off. Sometimes it's two and swimming. Yeah. So at the rec center.
All right, so I'm going to go ahead and ask. It's something I wouldn't necessarily put anybody on the spot, but just so that we can get a frame of reference. Do you
Nothing
know
out
how?
Of bounds.
Well, do you know how fast per 100 you're swimming?
Yeah. So if I give my all out effort for a single 100, the fastest I can get it is 126.
Oh my gosh!
And my, last week I did the full distance. I think it's the full distance, 2,100 yards is what I'm calling the full distance. So right before I started the training, I did the full distance in the pool and I could do it at about 154. And I did it yesterday. I did it 2 days ago again, and I'm down to 152. Per hundred. So I'm hoping my, so I obviously you see that I'm not, my fastest 100 is nowhere near what I can maintain.
Sure.
But I'm hoping to, my goal was roughly if I can get it to 150 in the pool, like the full distance, then maybe I'll be able to do something like 2 minutes in open water, is what I'm thinking. So roughly I'm hoping for, you know, 42 minutes or, but my A goal is just to be comfortable, not let it, you know, if it's, I know how these things go, and how the swim can catch people by surprise and the open water's so much different. And, you know, it's a whole different world. And unfortunately I don't have the benefit of, I'm not going to be able to get that many open water swims in before, again, cause it's early in the season. So I should be able to get like two reservoir swims in, because the reservoir opens for swimming about 2 weeks before that. And the local Boulder Masters group goes out to the reservoir twice and you can go join them, which is nice. I'm hoping to do just like two, you know, a couple outdoor swims, try out the wetsuit, and see how it goes, I guess. So that's kind of where I'm at. So when you're saying, oh my God, when I'm telling that, what?
You're fast.
Faster than I would. Well, that's why I asked, right? Because everybody has a different expectation, has a different background, has a different thing that they're working on. And swim is just that, it's that oddity because it's so much about form and technique than anything else. Right. And so, I was just interested to know, I think your swim times, they sound great. I think you have a really good perspective of where you think your pool and your open water difference translation is going to be. I agree with you. There's some difficulty. I would recommend swimming in your wetsuit in the pool a couple of times. And I would also recommend practice siding while in the pool. Because that's a technique in and of itself. And I would look up the crocodile eyes technique. It takes a little bit to do, but it's the technique that will save you the most amount of time if you can get comfortable doing it. And so practicing it in the pool is a good idea.
Awesome. Right. Thank you so much.
It saves energy because when you get in open water and you're trying to sight, you lift your head up, which drags your feet down, which then it takes all of this energy in your body and you're like, I mean, you gas out really fast and you're like, I can swim 2,000 yards, no problem. But I get in open water and I feel like I'm dying. And I mean, it's exhausting. And it's just because you're dragging your whole body down when you pop your head up to try and sight. So those crocodile eyes are really important.
Great. Well, I just wrote that down. I appreciate that. And that's been on my list of something that I've got to start practicing or thinking about because, yeah, I don't have a lot of confidence about swimming in a straight line. So I'm sure that's going to be – I'll probably end up swimming closer to 3,000 yards. I don't know what it's going to be. Hopefully not. But
Or you could just invest in those new form goggles that apparently have some sort of heads-up GPS tracker and will tell you which direction you're swimming. Right. I have a pair of form goggles, but I haven't figured out exactly how they know where you want to go, to be honest. I don't know if you plot the course out ahead of time. I watched the video and I'm not super clear on how it works.
I saw an ad for that and it was April Fool's Day and I didn't know if that was real.
It's
real.
It's legit. Yeah.
They're still marketing them. Yeah. So yeah. I will have some probably before the end of the year and I'll report back because my swim is that bad. that I will need those. So let's kind of recap. So you're a dink, right? So you're dual income, no kids. spent a year in Europe. You had a pretty significant climbing accident, derailed your marathon plans, got introduced to the Ironman 70.3 because of traffic one day, jumped right in following a 16-week off-the-shelf training plan, which is how I got started too. So don't feel bad. That's where a lot of us start. You're starting to check some things off, right? So you have the ability to be on course. You're going to run the half marathon. You know where you're swimming. So let's talk about biking. How are you feeling about? I mean, we're kind of breaking the transition up in an awkward way. But let's talk about how are you feeling? How are you feeling on the bike?
Yeah. So as I mentioned, you know, my cycling experience was cycle touring on a heavy bike, camping gear strapped to it in panniers in Europe, and that was it, which is a double-edged sword, because I learned that you know, when we would hit a 3% grade on those bikes, it feels like a 9% grade feels like on a road bike here with all that weight. So I've on the bike, you know, again, here in Colorado and in Boulder in particular, there's just such a large community of people that are into cycling. It's amazing. On the weekends when the weather's good, you go do some of these climbs outside of town, and it's open to cars, but it almost feels like it's the cyclists rule the road. There's just, you see teams, you see, you know, people are drafting off of you, and it's awesome. I love it. So I've really discovered a joy for cycling. And so another thing that I didn't mention is I am simultaneously planning on doing a road ride in July here in Colorado called the Triple Bypass, which is so I'm kind of balancing doing, you know, different training than I otherwise would. So the Triple Bypass is like, you go over three mountain passes. It starts in my hometown of Evergreen, Colorado. So I, you know, grew up, my dad would do it. My dad's done this ride since the late 80s when it was brand new. So I always heard about it. And now that I've kind of gotten into cycling, it's kind of cool to, you know, continue the legacy. And he's not able to do it anymore, so I can, you know, carry it on. And it's pretty significant elevation gain. It climbs like 11,000 feet of gain over about 120 miles. So ride it to complete it. You can start super early in the morning. It's not a race, it's a ride. But because I'm, you know, also planning on doing that a little over a month after the Boulder half Ironman, I'm mixing in a lot of climbing in my cycling. Mm-hmm. So I train on the course sometimes, which is pretty flat. There's some rollers, but it's not, you know, anything super significant. And then
his perspective of rollers is going to be very different than.
Yeah. I was about to ask, what's the elevation gain on the Ironman website list this race as?
You know what? I want to talk about that, because I think on the Ironman website, they list it as over 2,000 feet of gain. I think they say it's 2,200 or something.
Okay. Not that much.
Yeah. And I whatever they list it as, I rode the course, and at least my Strava didn't listed as much as they had either. So it's, and the gain that it does climb, it's kind of deceiving, because it's, there's one section that it's, you know, pretty consistent up for a while, but I think, it's meant to be a pretty fast course for people that train in this type of environment, because there's, the hills are never overly long or steep, and they're followed by fast downhills, you know? So it's kind of, if you can get into that rhythm of, not over pushing on the up, and you can keep the cadence and keep the watts up on the down, you know, so probably favors people that are good at bike handling. I'm not like, that's not a specialty of mine. I think, you know, in Boulder, we're blessed with lots of these roads that kind of just go up into the mountains from town. So there's so much, it's also just where the nicest riding is on the weekends. So, you know, you can ride in the flats, but, or the rollers at the base of the foothills here, But it's really nice to kind of go up to Jamestown and to Ward and the Peak to Peak Highway and some of these Flagstaff and some of these classic climbs outside of town. So I've been doing a lot of that on the weekends, supplementing my more course-specific, I guess, training.
So. Gotcha.
So Strava said that it had less elevation gain than the Ironman course set?
It did. Yeah, yeah.
That's unheard of.
Yeah,
that's
kind of weird, yeah.
Yeah, I would not want to wish any evil on you there, Austin, but I would double-check that. Ironman is not in the habit of overestimating the elevation gain in my experience. Yes. It is the opposite, in fact.
Drastically the opposite.
Yeah, I would just double check that just to make sure, like, maybe you were supposed to do that course twice.
That's interesting. So maybe it was, you know, I've only actually done the full loop as itself once. It could have been a thing on my end. But.
I did the relay team last year, and the woman on my relay team that did the bike discipline, she averaged like 23 miles an hour on the bike. She did so well. She's a very, very good triathlete. But by the time I got to the run, I was running with a whole bunch of fast men. And there were literally no women on the run course. And I was like, and everybody was passing me. And I'm like, I am not that slow. And then I realized that I was literally by myself, but it was all these really tall, super fit men passing me. And I'm like, oh yeah. Thanks, Andrea. You did such a great job on the bike that I'm here by myself. But yeah, she killed it.
I forgot about that. I remember you telling that story. Now that is super awesome. I want to go back to something though. I want to go back to the triple bypass. Ashley, are you familiar with this?
I've not considered this. No, thank you.
So Kat Heimberger actually is doing it this year, and she invited me. And I want to go. I don't know that I'm going to be able to go. It just depends on a few logistical things. But what I was told this weekend, because it actually came up in conversation, is that you shouldn't attempt it on a bike that doesn't have disc brakes. Austin, you said your dad's done it in the past. Like, how's your bike set up?
Yeah, that's interesting. I hadn't heard that, but my bike does have hydraulic disc brakes. And also, while we're on that topic, so bike wise, you know, because I'm doing some of these road rides and some of it is just for, you know, for fun and training for the triple bypass, I didn't have a bike other than the bike that I toured in Europe with, which is a totally different type of bike. So, you know, entering this, this training, I knew that I would need a bike. And I really thought about it a lot about, do I just go ahead and get a triathlon bike? Do I, get a road bike? People were saying that what you really want is a gravel bike because the best biking around Boulder is on gravel, and then you can actually still use that on the triathlon course as well. But in the end, you know, for my use case, I decided that I'm going road bike. So I'm a roadie. I got a road bike. It's got reasonably wide tires for a road bike, so it can still do some light gravel. And the other thing that I did not do is I did not equip it with clip-on aero bars. Thought about it a lot, did my homework on it, and kind of where I landed was, you know, with a triathlon bike, the geometry of it and the whole way it's kind of designed is for those aero bars. You know, you've got the brakes up there, and the whole thing is kind of like designed to be as efficient as possible in this aero position. And I understand with a really good bike fit, you know, you can make a road bike do that, but I kind of think it's not going to be optimal. I wanted to look up before this meeting when aero bars got introduced, but I don't think it was terribly long ago. So I figure for my use case, even if I lose a mile per hour or two on the course, rather than spending a lot of my training. The other thing is just I think people underestimate, and also, you know, because of accident recovery, I have some mobility constraints. But I think some people underestimate just like there's a lot of work and training that goes into maintaining that arrow position, being in the drops, and doing it as efficiently as possible. So I decided for this, my first triathlon, I'm just going to do it on a road bike, and my energy is just getting watts for my legs. I'm just trying to be, you know, as fit as I can be on my road bike. It also makes it nice for road rides or for coffee rides or for other things that I want to do on my bike outside of triathlon. And then here's the beauty of it is if I decide to do some more triathlon, well, maybe there's some free speed that I can get for my next one if I ever decide to, you know, full plunge into it and get a tri bike. But I think rather than equip the road bike to make it do something that it wasn't necessarily designed to do, I'll just hold off. And if I really decide to lean into this, I'll at some point get a TT bike.
Okay, I'm gonna let Ashley comment. And then, Austin, I'm going to share something with you that may change your mind.
All right. Let's hear it.
Okay. I mean, I think there's a lot of wisdom in a road bike, especially on hilly courses. Now, the aero bars, I understand your perspective, but on the descent of those hills, the aero bars definitely have a huge benefit. And, you know, the main point, not the aero bars don't just make you more aerodynamic. They save your legs because you use very specific muscles in your legs when you're in aero that allows your calves to have some relief so that you can get off the bike and you have the legs to run. So that is my perspective. But, you know, you're talking about, you know, you're still recovering from your injury. You have some, you know, some mobility. Yeah. Limitations. Yeah. So, you know, aero bars may not be the best thing for you. But I do think there is a benefit if it is an option.
All right. Fair enough. Okay.
Mike's perspective.
Yeah. So I'm going to start by saying, I agree. If you can only get one bike, if for whatever reason you only get one bike, I'm now in the camp, get a gravel bike. Get a gravel bike with two sets of wheels or two sets of tires, gravel tires, road tires, and clip-on aero bars. And I'm going to tell you why, okay? And it doesn't have anything to do with being an aero. So I just got done, as Ashley knows, racing Oceanside 70.3. And I spent a lot of time out of aero. And when I went into aero, it was to give my wrists a rest. Because when you're leaning on your wrists for that entire time, your hands go numb and your wrists get sore. And the majority of the time that I actually went into aero, it was to relieve the pressure on my hands and my wrists. And so that's something that I would never have come to organically if I hadn't experienced it this past weekend. So whether you use the aero bars or not, just think about the fact that it does give you that a little bit of a change in position, which, you know how when you're in the same position for so long, sometimes it just feels good to move around. Right. That's what I used my aero bars for. I mean, Ashley made all excellent points. I'm just saying is from my recent experience, that would be one reason I would strongly consider getting clip-on aero bars is just so you have an alternate position to put your hands to give them a little bit of a break.
Yeah. Fair enough. Yeah, fair enough.
Being able to change out of positions is, absolutely.
Even if it's just for 10 seconds, it made a big difference for me.
Right. That relief, that reprieve is a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Now, so you do have drop bars on your road bike, right?
I do. Yeah. So okay, that's so what I was, you know, I do go between the drop bar position and then the more relaxed, you know, other positions.
Yeah. So at least you do have that as a good position change, and the drop bars do allow you to be a little bit more aerodynamic.
Yeah.
So you do have that, but there's not a lot of reprieve on the wrist, like Mike mentioned.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Just something to consider. And like I said, you don't have to. I'm just giving you as a thing to consider.
Yeah. And, you know, it's tough to navigate all this stuff, you know, and I think triathlon, there's so much to it, you know, starting as knowing nothing And I think also the sport attracts a maybe type A type personality or people that really like the details. And I think for learning about it, you know, I found some really great resources. I really enjoyed like the Global Triathlon Network YouTube channel, as well as the Cycling Network counterpart. There's, you know, there's so much great content on like just YouTube or and find some people that have a little bit more experience that can kind of guide you. But in every discipline, there's so many of these considerations, and it feels like it's a lot. But my advice to anybody listening is don't be overwhelmed, because despite the fact that everybody has an opinion, there's still a whole lot of different ways to approach things, and there's actually fewer things than it might initially appear that you have to do. Of course, this is coming from somebody that hasn't even done a single race yet. So maybe I'll come back.
Your points are valid though. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's five ways to get to the same place. And that's why any advice I always get, I always say, you know, this is what worked for me. It doesn't mean it's going to work for somebody else. And what worked for somebody else isn't necessarily going to work for me. But I do think it's important to know what your options are and to know why somebody did choose the thing that they chose. So you make sure that you consider it. And I definitely live by the philosophy of better to have an option and not use it than to wish you had an option and it wasn't available to you. If it's something within reason. I wouldn't say go out and buy a new bike, but you know, within reason, if there's some things that you can do, I think is good. To consider. At this point, Austin, is there anything that you still feel like you need to work through or you need to make decisions on? Or are you feeling pretty good and just stay in the course where you're at?
Yeah, you know, we've covered a few of the things. Like the open water swimming is probably the thing that I'm most concerned about, the sighting, because I haven't had the opportunity to practice that. And then just like race day logistics. I don't understand how I'm, you know, tri-suit versus not a tri-suit, and like how the numbers are attached, and can I change my shirt in T2 if I want to use a bike jersey and run in a different shirt, or is the number stickied on to my shirt and I can't, so there's a million little things. I've had to also do practice with my like bike computer and my watch to be like, how am I going to manage it on race day to hopefully be able to. So those are some things that I absolutely
Oh my gosh, I love first timers. It's so fun to talk about these things.
So you know what? Let's talk about a few of those if we have time, right? I don't know how we are on time because I'm not in control. I'm a guest on this episode, Ashley.
We're a minute or an hour eight in. So
okay, are we all doing good? We all doing pretty good? Okay.
Yeah, this is exciting stuff.
You can change clothes in transition, but you can't be quote unquote nude, right? So men can be bare from the waist up, women cannot, right? And so if you're going to change your shorts, bring a big towel, right? There was a female athlete racked four down from me. She brought like a big poncho and she did a complete wardrobe change from swim to bike. If you want to change your shirt, absolutely change your shirt. Be comfortable. If you're going to change your shorts, make sure you bring a towel and practice that, right, in advance. Don't try to do that the very first attempt, because getting shorts on and off wet are going to be trickier than getting them on and off dry. But the name of the game, Austin, is going to be comfort, right? You want to be comfortable. And so what you need to consider is if you are planning on making any bathroom stops, you need to consider, am I going one piece tri or am I going two piece? Because a one piece tri kit is so much harder to navigate in the porta potty than a one piece tri kit.
I have a little bit of a different opinion about that.
Okay.
My opinion. Okay. Yes. The one piece is a pain to a degree. However, when you're pulling that tri-kit back up in the one piece, it's so much easier because you can just slide your arms through and then use your arms to pull it back up. While your tri-shorts, if you're wearing a two-piece and you have your tri-shorts and you pull them down and you're sweaty and they like do the roll thing, it is like a workout to pull them back up. So I am team one-piece just because of that. Because I used to do two-piece and at Ironman Des Moines, I ended up, and this is mainly a female thing because of the way tri-kits are made for women, but I had this tiny stripe sunburn at my hip where my tri-top had rolled up just one little bit on my right side, not on my left, just on my right side. And so for like 2 years, that sunburn strip was there.
Oh my God.
Just as a reminder of how miserable I was for 112 miles.
It was a badge of honor.
Something. Yeah. But I try kit for sure. Well, I mean, again, Mike's right. Be comfortable. So if you want to go bike shorts and then change into run shorts. And
yep. And so you will, your race bib, you'll get a number just like in a running race. And they make belts. They make a race belt. They're super cheap. You can clip it to it or you can pin it to your shirt. Depends. Most people will only wear their race bib on the run. Mm-hmm. Now, if you happen to be racing Oceanside next year, you will need it on the bike. But for the most of the time, it's only on your run. So if you are going to do a different shirt, you could pin it to the shirt in advance. You definitely do not want to be fumbling with the bib or the, you know, the number in the transition.
Safety. Yeah. Don't do the safety pins in transition. My race belt, I have several, but my favorite ones are ones that have like almost like they have little zipper pouches and like I will put chapstick in there. I will put ibuprofen in there. I will carry salt in there. I will carry snacks in there, some sort of nutrition. I mean, they're not big, so you can't put a lot in there, but they're big enough for me to carry all that. And I love it because then I can just, it's like this little miniature fanny pack, but it also has my race belt and it gets me through.
Nice.
They will put your race number on your swim cap.
Yep.
So you'll be in, they usually have three different colors of swim caps, right, Mike?
I've only seen the last few races are just two, pink and green.
They didn't have the all world.
They didn't
like the gold.
I didn't see any.
Okay. Okay. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't, but you'll have one or two different color race. And then, so your race number will be on that. So they'll see that. Did they body mark you, Mike, at Oceanside?
Nope. No body marking.
We're past that.
But your bike will have stickers on it. You'll have a sticker on your helmet.
Yep.
You'll have a sticker on your stem. And then you'll have a sticker on your seat tube.
Yep.
And you'll put all that stuff on the bike before you check it in, usually the day before.
Yep. They won't let you in transition without those stickers.
Mm-mm. And the number, you'll have a wristband that'll have your corresponding number on it. And that's how they'll know who you are. And then I think the question you had about the bike computer and the watch is a valid one. And I think the race rehearsal is a good day to practice that because I actually got fumbled up with that in Oceanside and didn't press the button. And so I have like a 4 hour transition and a 2 minute bike split on my Garmin based on the way that my watch was.
Yeah.
So definitely practice that.
I do math when I'm running because it distracts my brain about, you know, how many miles and my pace and stuff. But I don't want to have to do math that's on, well, during the actual race that's so bad that, you know, if there's a fumble with where I don't know how far into the race I am, that could be a hindrance, I can imagine. So I'm hoping to practice that and figure that out.
If you do it, I mean, it's not the end of the world. You just know that your watch or in your bike computer might say you have gone 20 miles, but maybe you've gone 25. And so really you have 5 miles less than what your watch says.
Right. How many bottles do you normally carry on your bike? Do you carry one or two or?
That's an excellent question.
It is.
Ashley, you want to go first?
Sure. Okay. So my bike, I'm very petite. So I have a very small frame. So I'm kind of limited in where I can put my bottles. So my hydration, I have a hydration kit in the front of my bike that sits underneath my aero bars. And it has a straw and it holds 37 ounces. And so I will put water in there. And then I have one cage underneath my saddle. And I will put electrolytes in that. And that is what I will carry. And then if I do hydrate properly, then I usually need to get one more at one of the aid stations. And with my hydration kit in the front, it has this circular opening. And so I can pop open a water bottle and just dump it in as I'm going. And then I can continue to drink from my hydration kit. And I don't have to worry about the bottle.
Nice, so, which is another thing that I was told I might want to practice, have my wife stand at the end of the driveway and the bottle, the, you know, bike by and try to grab a bottle. Or,
So, practice eating and drinking on the bike as much as you can.
Yeah,
100%. When you're coming into the aid station, if you're not getting anything, stay wide to the left.
Yep.
Because you don't want to get caught in the confusion. But you'll they'll usually have like water, Gatorade or whatever that's going to be called, right? Food, Gatorade, water. So it'll be like a reverse. And then there's an area to throw your trash, right? So there's a section where you can dump everything. So my hydration system, I just recently changed. I was carrying two bottles behind me. And then I also had a center mount hydration system. I changed my aero bars out. And so now I went to a speed fill hydration system that actually bolts to my down tube. It has a similar straw that Ashley described. So it comes up in between my handlebars. And it also has kind of an open lid to where I can grab a bottle and quickly fill it and then ditch the bottle. So I'm not, because reaching behind me, I'm just speaking for myself. I was never super comfortable doing reaching behind me, and I was constantly afraid I was going to drop a bottle. And so while this still takes a little bit of getting used to, I like the fact that when I am an aero, the straw is right there and it's easy to take fluid in. So my Garmin bike computer is set to go off every 15 minutes. It just kind of buzzes. And I know that's when I need to, every 15 minutes I need to be taking in fluid. Every 45 minutes I need to be taking in a gel, regardless of how I feel. And so I'm not saying I always stick to that, but that's my plan.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Nice. Yeah. Thank you. That's helpful. Yeah. And people just lose, I mean, you just come with bottles that I guess you bring cheap ones that, because you might lose your bottle, right?
People, right. Yeah. I never bring nice ones. I always bring, you know, my super cheap ones that I buy in bulk from Amazon. Because if I lose them, I don't care.
Kind of plan to toss them, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, you want to make sure they fit your bottle cage as best as possible. Right. But it is what it is.
Yeah. I will say that briefly yesterday, there was the conversation going on about in one of the triathlon groups that someone had been having acid reflux issues, especially on the run. And that's something I struggle with all the time. And it's because I'm in aero position drinking from the straw. And so that's something that if anybody has that kind of problem, that's something you need to be mindful of and kind of prepare for. Because when you have that reflux and you're running, it's miserable. You don't want to take anything in. You don't want to drink. You don't want to eat. So if you're considering getting a hydration kit with a straw like that, just be careful and mindful that that could happen.
Got it. Great. Yeah. Thanks. Yep. Yeah. And this is kind of where I'm at. We're practicing all this type of stuff, you know, especially my longer rides and stuff. So all the fun nitty gritty logistics into it now.
Okay. So we are at an hour 20.
Yeah. I think it's time to wrap this up. Austin, we've taken up so much of your time, and I have to say, I am really excited. I'm going to be tracking you on race day. Mm-hmm. I am going to be cheering you on virtually. Ashley, I know you will be too.
Oh yeah. And,
sure. Well, you know what? Yes, I think I'll be back in port, by then. But we'll connect after the recording and we'll go ahead and get your race recap episode scheduled, because we definitely are going to want to hear how your race went. And really, what I want to know is how did our advice help? Did our advice help or hinder you? Is something that we'll be interested in. It's okay if you're like, hey, this was just straight bad advice. And then we won't give it anymore.
That we would like the post-race survey feedback, please.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, yeah, definitely.
We're collecting our data to know how effective our advice is.
That's right. We expect all 10s.
Perfect. Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you again. You know, as I said, the plan got hatched for triathlon, and I just searched in podcasts like triathlon podcasts. And I've listened to a couple that didn't do much for me. And I've always, when I was biking across Europe on my long rides, I'd listen to your podcast, and I found some shows that I liked because it cool. was, you know, just approachable. It was information that I kind of learned about the sport. And now it's been, you know, even before I started the 16-week training plan, I've been working on this stuff. So it's been, you know, 8 or 9 months now that I've been kind of gradually working towards this goal. It's getting close, and I've learned so much along the way about all three disciplines and about how it all folds together. So excited as the race gets closer. It's just 8 weeks out now, so I appreciate all of your advice and everything that you provided, and we'll see how it all comes together. And you know, if I finish, I'll be happy. And if
no,
not,
you'll
we're
finish.
Not gonna talk like
finish.
That. We're not gonna talk
you're
like
gonna
that.
Finish. You're gonna
when
finish.
I
whatever
finish.
Happens, whatever happens, you know, there'll be lessons, I'm sure. And,
oh yeah.
Yeah.
100%. And if you haven't already, be sure to join the Everyday Ironman Podcast Facebook group, because there's a lot of really good advice, some really solid people in that group. They'll be cheering you on as well. Cool.
Great. Thank you so much. Yeah. Appreciate it.
Yeah. All right. We'll talk to you again in June.
Alrighty. Yes.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode. If you have any questions, advice that you would like to share, or would like to be a guest on the show and share your story, you can email everydayironmanpodcast@gmail.com. Also, don't forget to follow on Instagram @everydayironmanpodcast. Until next time, keep moving forward.